Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Arca Continental conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that this call is being recorded. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. For opening remarks and introductions, I would now like to turn the conference over to Melanie Carpenter of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Ma'am, please go ahead.
Thanks, Katie. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining the senior management team of Arca Continental to review the results for the fourth quarter and full year of 2018. The earnings release went out this morning, and it's available on the website, arcacontal.com, in the Investor Relations section. There's also a webcast of this event for you to listen to live and via replay. It's my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Joining us from Monterey is the CEO, Mr. Arturo Gutierrez, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Emilio Marcos. We also have Mr. Jose Borda, the Chief Commercial and Digital Officer, as well as the Investor Relations team. They'll be making some forward-looking statements today, so we ask that you just please refer to the disclaimer and the conditions surrounding these statements in the earnings release. And with that, I'll turn the call over to Arturo Gutierrez to begin the presentation. Please go ahead, Arturo.
Thanks, Melanie. Good morning, and thank you, everyone. We appreciate you joining us today. Before I begin with my prepared remarks, let me highlight an important announcement we made last month. Manuel Barragan Morales will retire as chairman of the board after a remarkably productive tenure of 14 years. This will become effective at our next annual shareholders meeting on April 4th. Under Manuel's leadership, Arca Continental became a leading global bottler of Coca-Cola, profitably doubling revenues every 5 years and significantly multiplying its market value through a combination of strong organic growth and strategic geographic expansion. As a recognition to such achievements, our board of directors unanimously designated him as honorary lifetime chairman. We sincerely want to thank Manuel for his leadership and highlight his legacy to our organization. As part of the same announcement, the board of directors elected Jorge Santos Reyna as its new chairman. Jorge has been on AC's board since 2001, serving as vice chairman since 2007. We wish to reiterate our commitment to work jointly with Jorge to continue expanding Arca Continental's position as a leader and as one of the most attractive investment options in the food and beverage industry. Now let's summarize our performance for the fourth quarter and full year 2018. As you are aware, last year was marked by ongoing persistent macroeconomic challenges to our industry and our businesses. The combination of a slowdown in some of the countries where we operate, the prolonged uncertainty in Argentina, new excise taxes on sweetened beverages in Peru, and new tariffs on key raw materials such as aluminum in the U.S., all created one of the most adverse economic environments for a company in recent years. Nonetheless, we are pleased to report that despite this turbulence, Arca Continental continued to make steady progress. Our organization came together to tackle the issues and implement solutions that resulted in a positive outcome as we continue to gain value share across almost all our operations for both the quarter and the year. Total consolidated volume declined 1.2% in the fourth quarter and grew 6.4% for the full year to reach more than 2.2 billion unit cases. Once again, we led industry growth and expanded value share in non-alcoholic ready-to-drink beverages. Consolidated revenues increased 3.2% in the fourth quarter and 14% for the full year, reaching record sales close to 159 billion pesos. Consolidated EBITDA remained flat for the quarter and grew 5.7% for the full year. Now let's briefly review our performance across our operating groups, beginning with Mexico. Our beverage business in Mexico had a challenging fourth quarter. Total volume declined 1.1% due to rainy weather and below average temperatures. Rainfall in many areas was at the highest level in years. Precipitation in four of our largest regions was more than double the level from 2017. Moreover, well below normal temperatures were also experienced in many of our large cities and metropolitan areas. Despite such negative weather conditions, our team worked diligently to mitigate the impact in the quarter and drive a 2.3% volume growth for the full year. Total revenues in Mexico rose 7.5% in the quarter and 6.7% for the full year to reach 62.4 billion pesos. Average price per case, not including jug water, rose 10% in the quarter to 59.4 pesos. We refined our price pack architecture and surpassed our goal to increase prices slightly above inflation in the year, while at the same time gain value share across all the categories where we compete, outpacing once again the beverage industry in Mexico. EBITDA declined in the quarter and increased 3% for the full year to 13.5 billion pesos, representing a margin of 21.7%, a contraction of 77 basis points, mainly due to increases in PET prices and concentrate. 2018 was an outstanding year for our still beverage operation, which now is over 15% of our total volume mix. Importantly, we continue growing and gaining share across all categories, juices, sports, energy, and dairy. Notably, Santa Clara's dairy portfolio continued growing double digits. In 2018, we expanded coverage, innovated in packaging, and launched new flavored milk presentations. Moving now to our beverage business in South America, total volume in the fourth quarter was practically flat. Volume growth in Peru was partially offset by declines in Argentina and Ecuador. For the year, total volume declined 2.4% to 551 million unit cases, but we continue making sequential progress across the region under a volatile macroeconomic environment. Let me provide you with more color on each of our countries in this region. Our beverage business in Peru delivered solid volume growth in the fourth quarter, up 3.6%, confirming the recovery trend of the last couple of quarters, while volume was down 6.3% in the full year. Quarterly volume growth was driven by sparkling beverages and bottled water, up 4.4% and 6.5% respectively. The economy in Peru gathered pace and strengthened considerably in the fourth quarter, with notable job gains and robust credit growth on the back of solid consumer spending. Our team mitigated the strong impact of the new excise tax, leveraging the experience gained from past cases in Mexico and Ecuador. Once again, our price pack architecture, revenue management disciplines, and returnable packages played a key role in this quick turnaround. We will continue investing in market-focused initiatives, boosting returnable presentations, and increasing cooler coverage. In fact, in 2018, we installed over 30,000 additional cold drink units. In addition to our commercial initiatives, we doubled down on our cost savings and efficiencies program. Great example is the new distribution center we opened in South Lima last November. This $50 million state-of-the-art facility serves over 22,000 points of sale and significantly streamlines logistics and distribution costs, while improving service levels to our customers. Notably, despite economic weakness and the decline in consumer demand, we expanded margins and increased our overall profitability. In 3 years of operating in Peru, we are satisfied with the results achieved to date and the opportunities available to continue expanding the business in a country with solid fundamentals and positive long-term prospects. In Ecuador, fourth quarter volume declined slightly by 0.8% and grew 3.7% for the year, driven by a 2% increase in sparkling and 10.2% in still beverages. We also gained value share in 2018 despite weakening consumer demand. This quarter, we launched a new version of Fanta as we continued innovating our portfolio by reformulating products to offer more low and no calorie options. Tonicorp, our dairy business, delivered low single-digit revenue increase in the quarter and was flat for the year. Despite the slowdown in the Ecuadorian economy, Tonicorp consolidated its market leadership and captured additional value share across all four core categories: yogurt, flavored milk, oatmeal, and ice cream. Execution on the point of sale and product innovation have been the pillars of our successful commercial strategy. Moving now to Argentina, consumers have been severely impacted by a slowing economy, rising inflation, and reduced disposable income. Volume in the fourth quarter declined 7.9% and remained flat for the year. Despite prevailing economic challenges, we gained value share in alcoholic ready-to-drink beverages as we reinforced our twofold strategy to promote single-serve consumption and to increase affordable, returnable presentations. We posted revenue growth in local currency terms. Once again, our price package architecture allowed us to pass through most of the effect of high inflation rates. We remained focused on cost discipline and optimization. In 2018, we captured significant savings as a result of the vertical integration in cane sugar. Turning now to our beverage operation in the United States, Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages delivered its seventh consecutive quarter of revenue growth, up 3% in the fourth quarter and 42% for the full year to reach $2.7 billion. We continue to grow value share in alcoholic ready-to-drink beverages, driven mainly by sparkling, sports drinks, and sparkling water, up 0.4%, 3.4%, and 5.3% respectively. Price mix grew 5.6% in the quarter, delivered mainly by a rate increase of 4.6% achieved after the pricing actions taken last July on our sparkling portfolio. Price mix for the year grew 3.4%, reaching our goal to be at or above consumer inflation. Volume declined 2.6% in the fourth quarter and grew 0.1% for the year as we faced an unusual series of challenging hurdles which impacted our volume performance. Our territories experienced record rains and flooding and also a tough comparison base as volume in the fourth quarter of 2017 included significant volume of case pack water for recovery efforts related to Hurricane Harvey. We continue strengthening our ACT commercial model as we completed the first full year operating in the U.S. We are refining point-of-sale execution with a strong focus on consolidating the fundamental strategy and improving customer intimacy by increasing face-to-face interactions. We have also improved key metrics such as visit completion and strike rate, yielding additional consumer orders. Another core element of our commercial model is cooler coverage. In 2018, we placed additional cold drink equipment to reach 40% coverage. In another significant milestone, the new Body Armor brand was successfully launched at the end of October, with 24 SKUs now carried in our Retrox. As we start our third year of operations, we are convinced that we have a strong business plan for 2019. We are encouraged by the fast start in January with results beating volume and revenue plan targets. The ACT model will continue to be the backbone of our execution strategy with tailored strategies based on consumer segmentation, price increases above consumer inflation, a new model for the on-premise channel, and continuously improving execution through the fundamentals. I will now provide you with an update on our synergy plan. I am glad to report that we are on track and making steady progress to achieve our target of $90 million in annual synergies by 2020. Our current projects are doing well and generating significant benefits. As of last December, we have captured $32 million on annual running rate basis. Key savings initiatives in 2018 included bottle-like weighting, shifting to plastic pallets, eliminating shells, using one-piece closures to reduce resin weight, leveraging procurement negotiations to reduce aluminum conversion costs, deploying sleek can production capacity, and reducing CO2 consumption by increasing yield, among others. There are also revenue synergies, which are coming primarily from the expansion of coverage in Topo Chico and Mexican Coke and an improved vending machine operation. Additionally, we're already starting to see significant benefits by replicating best practices in revenue growth management and route to market from our ACT commercial model. In 2019, our plan incorporates a number of projects for additional synergies and $11 million of carryover benefits from 2018. Let me now close our operation review with our snack business. Wise in the U.S. delivered high single-digit revenue growth in the quarter, driven by growth in the potato chip category, where Deep River expanded product coverage thanks to our expansion of distribution capabilities. The tortilla chip category grew double digits in the fourth quarter and for the full year. Other categories that are becoming more relevant to our business are popcorn and onion rings, both boosting growth in the quarter and the year. We also continue expanding our national footprint of core brands with large retailers. In 2019, we will keep investing in product innovation, enhancing brand equity of our portfolio, and further expanding distribution in new territories and categories as we leverage the addition of Deep River and Carolina Country Snacks' portfolio of brands. Bocados in Mexico continued building its growth momentum, posting sequential mid-single-digit sales growth in the fourth quarter and the full year, driven by exceptional growth in the supermarket and wholesale channels. Bocados outpaced the salty snacks industry in Mexico, driven by growth in extruded chips and popcorn. Lastly, Inalecsa in Ecuador posted a low single-digit sales decline in the quarter. On a full-year basis, sales were up in the low single digits, driven by revenue management initiatives and a strategic focus on promotions. We continued innovating our product portfolio with the launch of a new line of corn chips. In the quarter, we started up a new production line to support this new category of chips. And with that, I will turn the call over to Emilio to comment on our financial results. Please, Emilio.
Thank you, Arturo, and good morning, everyone. We're pleased you're here with us to review our year-end company results. Arca Continental's positive results were achieved thanks to the disciplined price pack architecture and initiatives implemented in the second half of the year, where we registered price increases above inflation in the majority of our operations, partially offsetting the slow volume trend and higher raw material prices. Meanwhile, our Peruvian business unit continued its fast recovery due to a better economic outlook combined with the efficiency plan set forth at the beginning of the year. Both aspects contributed to better margins in the fourth quarter. It's important to mention that this is the first comparable quarter since U.S. acquisition in 2017. Also in the quarter, we're recognizing the effect of Argentina hyperinflationary accounting as we began to express the figures in real terms from July 2018. First, we adjusted the local currency numbers with inflationary effects to reflect the currency purchasing power. Then we translated to Mexican pesos using the end of period exchange rate. All this expression process gave us a marginal negative impact in net income. Now I will go into the numbers. Arca Continental's consolidated revenues increased 3.2% in the fourth quarter, led by the U.S. and Mexico region growth with 6.8% and 7.5%, mainly due to price increases in the various operations in the second half of the year. This was partially offset by the increase in revenues from South America of 7.2% from the Argentina devaluation effect. For full year 2018, revenues grew 14%, with Mexico growing 6.7% and the U.S. up 43.1% due to three more months of sales from the Coca-Cola Southwest beverages than in 2017 and 8 months from the Oklahoma territory. Comparable currency neutral net revenues increased 6% in the quarter, and in the year, excluding U.S. beverage operation, were up 6.2%. In the fourth quarter, we reported a gross margin of 42.6% versus 45% in the same period of 2017, which is down 230 basis points due to higher raw material prices, mainly PET, with an increase of more than 20% in South America and 14% in U.S. Consolidated EBITDA for the quarter was flat versus last year at 6.8 billion pesos for a margin without revenues outside the territory in the U.S. of 17.3%. The dilution is explained by the contribution margin effect, partially offset by the South America SG&A control. In 2018, EBITDA rose to 27.5 billion pesos, up 5.7%, for a margin of 17.6% without revenues outside the territory in the U.S., a dilution from 19% last year explained by the impact on raw material prices and the integration of Coca-Cola Southwest in April and Oklahoma in September 2017. On a currency-neutral comparison basis, EBITDA in the quarter increased 5% and full year excluding U.S. beverages operation 4.2%. The comprehensive cost of financing in the quarter reached an expense of 640 million pesos versus an income of 237 million pesos in the same period of 2017. The variation is explained by a higher exchange rate gain due to the effect of the Mexican peso devaluation on our dollar cash position in 2017. For the full year, this line increased 62% to 4.1 billion pesos due to an exchange rate loss in 2018, as we posted a gain in 2017. This quarter, we're posting a monetary position gain from Argentina of 245 million pesos. Income tax provision increased in the fourth quarter to 695 million pesos for an effective tax rate of 19.2%, explained by the final deferred tax adjustment due to the U.S. tax reform. For the full year, income taxes increased 18.4% to 3.9 billion. Effective tax rate for 2018 was 26.3%. In the quarter, net income decreased 45.3% to 2.3 billion pesos, representing a margin of 5.8%. The decrease is explained by the hard comps since 2017 net income has a benefit from deferred tax adjustment resulting from the change in the U.S. corporate tax rate. For full year 2018, net income decreased 33.5% to 8.7 billion pesos, reflecting a margin of 5.5%. The 2017 net income had two extraordinary effects, the sale of Topo Chico brand and the U.S. deferred tax adjustment. As of December, our balance sheet reflected a cash position of 16 billion pesos, a total debt of 55.8 billion pesos for a net debt to EBITDA coverage ratio of 1.45 times. In 2018, our operating cash flow reached 20.8 billion pesos. The total capex investment for the year were 11.4 billion pesos, in line with the amount announced in April 2018. In 2019, we're expecting to have more stable raw material prices. We will continue with strict controls on SG&A and the execution of our synergy plan in the U.S. All this combined with the deployment of innovation in our commercial platform across our operations will allow us to deliver solid results to our shareholders. And with that, I will turn it back to Arturo.
Thank you, Emilio. We expect consolidated annual volume growth at around 2% in 2019. We will continue adjusting prices in line with inflation at each of our operations while always ensuring that our products remain affordable. We plan to invest 7 to 8% of total sales in CapEx. As always, we will follow a disciplined and consistent approach to make the necessary investments to strengthen our market execution and further accelerate our digital transformation and innovation agenda. Additionally, we will invest in strategic initiatives, such as the new production facility in Houston, Texas, scheduled to start operations in the first quarter of 2020. On the commodities front, we anticipate a benign sweetener price scenario going forward. Our investments in sugar mills in Mexico and Argentina give us more flexibility and make us more competitive. In Argentina, our sugar mill investment resulted in an overall cost reduction of 22% compared to market prices. In Peru, we recently hedged all of our sugar needs for the entire year at an attractive price. Regarding PET, resin prices and plastic packaging materials are expected to remain stable in dollar terms for the remainder of the year. In aluminum, we will continue with our disciplined hedging program to mitigate volatility. We hedge the LME component, which represents the largest portion of the cost. We closed already over 80% of our needs for U.S. operations in 2019 at lower prices than 2018. In addition, This year, we started a new hedging program to mitigate volatility of fuel prices in the U.S. To date, we already hedged 80% of our diesel consumption for the year at a competitive price as well. All that said, we expect to experience some turmoil in the near term in some markets, although the economic climate in Argentina and Ecuador may not yet have shifted to a favorable scenario, they are expected to remain neutral for our business in 2019. Nonetheless, other regions are doing well or are starting to recover. Our operations in key markets such as Mexico, Peru, and the U.S. should be our growth engines for the near future. Looking ahead, 2019 is shaping up to be stronger than 2018 overall. We will remain focused on creating shareholder value through sustainable, profitable growth across all our businesses. As we have done consistently in our 93-year relationship with the Coca-Cola Company, we look forward to once again collaborate to drive forward momentum in 2019. As part of such effort, we will continue to respond swiftly and effectively to the new challenges we face in our markets, particularly Latin America. It has always been part of doing business in the region, and we've learned to act and prosper in such environments. I would like to now open the call for questions. Operator, we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you, sir. At this time, we'll open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star two. As a reminder, due to high interest and time, please limit yourself to one question. Again, please press star one if you would like to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal. Thank you. Our first question comes from Fernando Alvera with Bank Merrill Lynch.
Hi, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for taking my questions. And by the way, my line disconnected, so I'm sorry if I ask something that you already mentioned. I have two questions. The first one is regarding Mexico. Can you tell us how is volume performing here today after the government reduced taxes and increased wages in the northern border? And in this case, if the trend you are seeing right now will continue throughout the year? And also, on volume, regarding your guidance for 2019, can you give us a breakdown by country? And my other question is on about South America. EBITDA margin expansion was really outstanding. So can you talk about the EBITDA margin performance by country during the quarter, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando, for your question. It's actually the first question today. So we will address the first part. I will address the first part and then turn it over to Emilio. And first of all, Mexico is a market that continues to grow. And, you know, you've seen the performance that we've had in the Mexican market for the last, 4 years. And there's we've continued to find opportunities to grow in the market. And there are very good signs now of the situation in the country that will certainly impact consumption, the increase in the minimum wage, as you mentioned, the VAT taxes that were reduced. And we actually, it's important to mention that we passed through the benefit of that tax and some price adjustments in the border. But we had tough comparisons from 2018. So we are basically flat so far. We're expecting a positive performance in the rest of the year. There are other things in all of Mexico that also are going to be important for growth. The universal pensions that were announced and other benefits to the general population that will impact domestic consumption across Mexico. And that is reflected in the consumer confidence for the country. That increased in January compared to the same period in 2018. So there's some much better optimism about the future of the economy. And so now we've had, obviously based on the performance of last year, when you have a bigger growth in the first quarter in some regions, probably those are not growing as much this year. So it's all, fairly balanced, I would say. If you look at growth across channels, we continue to have growth in the traditional channel. We saw the month of December where we had a very robust growth in all of the Mexican market. The quarter shows a decline in volume, but it's mostly affected by poor weather conditions in the months of October and November. And the other thing that it's important to note is we had price increases, leveraging our RGM capabilities and our prices in the last quarter and also in the first month of the year of 2019 are going to be well above inflation. So that's very important. If we think about guidance 2019, certainly there are markets where we have a bigger opportunity. The ones that would be performing above the average that we've provided would be, certainly Peru has, I would say, the biggest opportunity recovering from the taxes of last year. We're still comparing with the pre-tax volumes, and we continue to grow the market. We have a lot of opportunities as we execute better, especially in the market of Lima. So that would be above the average. The country that probably has the most challenging situation would be Argentina. So we would maintain our full year target in volume to be flat. I would say that would be a good outcome in Argentina for the year, considering the conditions. It's going to be a very difficult first half of the year in Argentina. I think conditions will improve mid-year, and we'll have the opportunity to recover some of the volume in the second half of the year. At the same time, we look for opportunities in some regions in Argentina that we were not serving as we would like, especially third-party distributor volume. So there are always opportunities in the market, but certainly those conditions will affect us more in that country. And the other big market, the U.S., is also expected to grow, which is, as you know, it's always a challenge in a more mature market. Those would be my general comments in volume. So I will turn it over to Emilio for the final part of your questions, Fernando.
Thank you for your question, Fernando. Good morning. Yes, as you mentioned, in South America, we have very good expansion on margins. We increase margins in Peru and Argentina. The only one that did not have an improvement on margins was Ecuador. The expansion in Peru has an extraordinary benefit this quarter that since we received some participation from the Coca-Cola company to increase promotion with our customers. But even without this positive income, Peru expanded margins in the quarter for 250 basis points. We have done a very good job on OPEX control in basically all of our operations. And in Argentina, even though the situation and the volume and the economic situation in Argentina, we have done a good job also in SG&A and OPEX. We have improved margins in Argentina in the quarter due to price strategy or integration in sugar, as Arturo has mentioned, that we have the sugar mill there, and also the hyperinflationary accounting give us a little bit of improvement on margins. But even without all these extraordinary effects, South America expanded margins in the quarter. We're really happy with those results. As I said, the only country with lower margins in the quarter was Ecuador. But in the full year, basically, the margins were a little bit lower than last year. We have a very high increase in PET prices that were partially offset by better negotiation on other raw materials. But overall, in the year in South America, we had a very good result in the year with a 40 basis points margin expansion during the year. And we expect for this year to keep those margins, of course, and try to improve them since we have a very good, better raw material outlook overall. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Fernando.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sergio Matsumoto with Citigroup.
Yes, hi, good morning. I wanted to ask about your view around the aluminum cost and when it might normalize for you. You mentioned that there was a hedge at a lower price. Would that benefit be starting in the next quarter or in one of the subsequent quarters in 2019? That's the first question. And the second question is if you could provide an update on the U.S. synergies and how much we could expect in 2019. Thank you.
Sure, Sergio. Good morning, and thank you for your question. Let me talk about aluminum first. As you know, we've explained in this call before that there are two components to the aluminum price. And on the one hand, we have the LME, which is, let's say, the basic metal price. And that price increased in 2018 significantly versus 2017. And now we have hedged at a lower price in 2019 versus 2018. So that is a factor that will, in a way, stabilize prices. The problem that we have is with the other component, which is the Midwest premium. And that was affected by the duties imposed to aluminum in the U.S., aluminum coming from other countries. It is important to say that, you know, most of our aluminum is not imported anyway. It is scrap aluminum. It's recycled. But that's, you know, how the system is operating right now. It's really an increasing price that has, you know, no logic behind it. But that is how the logistic price is calculated. That increased last year as a result of the duties and tariffs imposed. So those are not being reversed. So we believe that as part of the free trade agreement that might be approved by probably mid-year, there would be a positive effect on those duties on aluminum. So at this point, we are seeing the benefit of the LME hedging, but we're still having the negative comparison of the Midwest premium in the first quarter of last year versus where we have right now. So just to give you an idea, the Midwest premium is still the, you know, the smaller component of the price, but it went up like 100% last year. So that is the comparison that we're kind of suffering right now. And that since it's completely artificial, we expect that to normalize at some point. But it has not happened, and it is connected to the free trade negotiations and final agreements. So let me address now your second point, which is the synergy plan in the U.S. So as I said, we've achieved around $32 million of synergies in projects that we carried out throughout 2018. Some of that is reflected in our 2018 results, and some of that is going to be carried over to 2019. About $11 million would be carried over approx. The other 21 were reflected in the financial statements. They were unfortunately overshadowed by a lot of the negative effects that we had during the year, specifically aluminum, PET, and fuel costs. If you account for those, it's very similar to the impact, the positive impact that we had from synergies. So we had around 25 projects in 2018, and if you let me mention some of those, the most important were improvements to line utilization that reduces labor cost. We shifted from wood to plastic pallets. It's a very important project in terms of savings. We had a lot of procurement savings from negotiations. We optimized CO2, the yields of CO2. We had lightweighting of bottles, although it was a smaller impact. We started this year, we're going to start this year with a test and the 20-ounce bottle reducing weight, which has a much bigger impact. And the 20-ounce, just to give you an idea, we're at 22 grams in the U.S. In our markets in Mexico, we are at 17.5. Obviously, it's not as easy to move down to that weight because it connects to shelf life and all that. But just reducing 1 gram of weight in the U.S. would result in $1 million savings, roughly. So we're going to start gram by gram in our U.S. market. We moved into different type of labels and different types of closures. We started producing cans in other plants like San Antonio that reduce freight. And we had something that's important to mention. We hadn't mentioned it before. It's a sensitive issue, but we reorganized our company in the U.S. We moved from the five regions to three operational regions, and that accounts for significant savings. None of that is reflected in 2018 because the project was announced in the final part of the year, and it became effective on January. So it is a big reorganization within our company. And then we have some of the revenue synergies. The revenue synergies are the ones that you can really track easier, like Topo Chico, like Mexican Coke, like vending operation. And then we have some of the revenue synergies that are not included in the numbers that I mentioned, which are the RGM synergies. It's harder to calculate. Same thing as a better execution in the market. Those things should bring additional value. Since they're difficult to calculate, we're very strict and rigorous about the calculations, we're not including those in the 32 million calculation. We certainly believe that that is going to bring additional value in the short and the long term. So I don't know if that answers your question, Sergio.
Yes, it did. Thank you, Arturo.
Thank you, Sergio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Arturo and Emilio. Thank you for taking my question. I just have two quick questions. The first one on Peru. I was wondering if you can remind us what was the base of low-calorie products prior to the implementation of the tax last May. You mentioned on your press release that it's 28% at the moment. I was just curious to see where was it, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, and where do you think this number can get to over the medium term? So that's number one. And then number two, in the U.S., clearly volumes decelerated in the fourth quarter relative to the first 9 months. And this is happening even when there is so low-hanging fruit, I presume, in terms of the revenue synergies that you were just describing, no, Arturo? So does this tell you at all that there are more difficulties in implementing price increases ahead of inflation, let's say in the next 2-3 years, than you were foreseeing, or is there any sort of one-off in the fourth quarter explaining this volume weakness that we shouldn't extrapolate as we look at the price increases that you are yet to implement in the next 2-3 years?
Thank you, Antonio. I will address your second question first, and then sure. I will let Pepe Borda talk about Peru and Local. In the case of the U.S., We certainly had a challenging quarter, but our volume declined in the quarter. We still are comfortable with where we are and the growth in the U.S. market. As you say, there are still opportunities with things that we're doing in some of the new categories, and there are opportunities in the traditional categories just in the way we execute in the market. We had a good December. Actually, we suffered really weather conditions, record rains, flooding throughout our territory, and also we had a difficult comparison in the fourth quarter as we compared with some of the volume, especially water and bulk water or case pack water for Hurricane Harvey's recovery actions in 2017. So I think those are not an indication of how we're going to perform this year. In terms of prices, you see the prices were increased in mid-July, and the impact of these changes in the fourth quarter really was minimum. During that period, sparkling experienced a decline, and stills also declined despite not having price increases in those categories. So it's really consistent with the weather and the colder temperatures in October and November. Our value share went up in sparkling and stills. So that means that, our pricing actions, I think, were very effective. And that is one of the synergies that we are continuing to implement in 2019. There are a number of things that make us especially optimistic of things that we're doing in the market. In the fourth quarter, we started rolling out our go-to-market capabilities, and that is mostly targeting the on-premise channel. We have new go-to-market pilots, and this consists basically of reallocating resources, some account manager roles, increasing face-to-face interactions with our customers. This is without increasing costs. Actually, there might be even some cost savings there in the reallocation of our resources. But it certainly also promotes a closer connection with our customers in the on-premise channel, that is where we have the biggest opportunity. As we track our fundamentals, one of the basic fundamentals indicators is the availability of your products, of your basic products, and the customers. And we have three channels: large store, small store, and the on-premise. And the on-premise is where we have the biggest opportunity. The availability there, in many cases, it's 25-30% of those basic SKUs. So there's a lot still to do. So we expect 2019 to be a very, very good year. We had a good January also, as I mentioned in my initial remarks. So that also makes us very optimistic about our prospects in the U.S.
And on that chance, Arturo, just before we move on to Peru, and thanks for the caller, is there any chance you give us an informal, if not very numerical, guidance on do you still expect 2019 to price ahead of inflation in the U.S. specifically?
Yes, that is our expectation, certainly for 2019. As you know, prices in the U.S. are negotiated, as a system for most of the customers. So we already have defined some of the prices for the year, and then the rest of the local customers, we align to that price increase to maintain a price coherency. So we do expect to have prices above inflation in 2019 as well. Answering your question.
Thanks, Arturo.
So if that answers your second part of the question, I will turn it over to Pepe Borda to address your question about the Peru market for local.
Thank you, Arturo. Hello, Antonio. When we talk about low and no calorie products, let's remember that we're talking about zero calorie and low calorie products that are those that have less than 20 calories per 100 ml. We finished December of last year with a mix of 36% of low and no calorie products within our portfolio. That was a 12 percentage points increase versus last December. For a full year of 31% mix, increasing 5.3 in the full year versus 2017. I don't have the exact numbers of 3 years ago, but I would say that it was around 20% low and no calorie mix at that time. Thank you. That answers your question, Antonio.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Cody.
Thank you, Antonio.
Thank you. Good
talking.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Antonio Hernandez with Barclays.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Congratulations on your results. I have a question regarding the U.S. Besides what you mentioned regarding the weather headwinds, but what other challenges do you expect there, especially because of, as you already mentioned, it is a more mature market. So in terms of competitiveness and other issues, what other challenges do you expect there? Thanks.
Thank you, Antonio. if you're asking about challenges in the market as we grow, well, certainly the U.S. is the most competitive market where we operate. So I think, you know, the challenges that you have to continue to incorporate new products and grow different categories as, you know, as consumers are very demanding. And for that, you know, we have the advantages that we have a system in the U.S. that is very closely networked to work and identify opportunities in some of the growing categories. As you know, we incorporated Body Armor very successfully. We also have been growing a Monster, and we are actually planning to continue to grow Monster in our market, and that is a you know a source of continuous growth as well. The other challenge, as always, is the pricing situation, because it's something that we negotiate as a system. But I think as you refine your capabilities for pricing in RGM, it's based on analysis and identifying those opportunities. We have been able to capture the benefits of pricing above inflation, because as you know, price is always it's not always just increasing the rate. It's also about how you handle the promotions, and that's one of the opportunities that we still have in the U.S. market. So all in all, I think, you know, we still are in a position to capture many of the things that we've been doing so far. Last year, we completed the first year of operating under the new ARAC model, and that means having new metrics in the market, the culture of fundamentals. We believe that many of those initiatives have not really paid off completely. So we have to increase our indicators. The indicators that we adopted that relate to availability of product, to just visit completion. Let me give you some numbers. Visit completion, that means visiting the customers that we should, went from 77 to 87% at the end of the year. Strike rate, which means when you take orders, improved from 78 to 85%. We visited 400,000 more customers and wrote like 200,000 more orders. Those are the implications of rolling out that model, and that is what we've seen at the end of the year. Also, our cold drink equipment strategy, that is also increased last year in the strike zone from, you know, 33% to 40%. So there are many of the things in executing in the market that we've been continuously improving. So if you look at the indicators of the last part of the year and you project those to the future, that certainly is going to give us additional growth in the U.S. market as well.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Thanks, Antonio.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sam Ray with UBS.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, Arturo, Emilio, and team. Thanks for taking the question. I mean, my queries are also on the profitability. Firstly, for Mexico, I mean, the price increase was very strong at around 10% during the fourth quarter. But despite the strong pricing, and you also saw the increase in returnable packaging, plus you also saw a mid-teen growth in vending, all that is very, should be margin accretive. But it was a bit surprising to see the EBITDA drop in Mexico during the quarter. So could you please explain what is driving that, and if you're seeing a change of this trend in this year so far? And that's the first question. And the second question is more on the accounting side, I would say. I mean, we noticed a difference in the growth trend between operating income and EBITDA during the fourth quarter. I mean, basically, even if we adjust for the non-recurring expense, EBIT was down high single digit, but EBITDA came flat. So if you could share some light as to why the D&A rose so much, that would also be very helpful. Thank you so much again.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Let me talk briefly about your first point. I'll turn it over to Emilio to address your questions. But certainly the impact in profitability in Mexico is something that results from, you know, some of the factors that we've mentioned, especially the biggest impact in Mexico have been PT costs for the year. I think that was the biggest impact that continues to show. Prices for PT in 2019 look more favorable, as I mentioned. Also, concentrate prices. Those are the, you know, the things that we've seen throughout the year. PT has, as I said, a positive trend. the fourth quarter of last year, we also had some probably one-timers that are still impacting EBITDA, not considered non-recurring, but we believe some of the consulting fees and things that we've been incurring. But I will turn it over to Emilio to give you a more detailed explanation on that point and also on your accounting question.
Yeah, thank you, Arturo. Thank you for your question, Sam. How are you? You mentioned EBITDA margin in Mexico region, including complementary businesses, show a dilution of 166 basis points in the quarter. The last quarter of last year, we have the highest raw material prices in the year in Mexico, mainly PET and concentrate prices because of the incidence price increase to coke. That impact us in the quarter 180 basis points. So this negative impact was partially offset by the increase in prices in the quarter. Additionally, as Arturo just mentioned, we have an administrative expense increase, as you can see in our P&L. Administrative expenses increased double digit since, as you know, we are very active in our digital transformation and innovation agenda. So we have some extraordinary fees last quarter for those services that impacted also the margin in Mexico and the consolidated basis. But even with all these raw material price increases and incidents, the barrels business in Mexico maintained margins compared to last year overall. So margins during the year in the barrels business in Mexico were flat, even though all these raw material prices increases, and as you know, incidence price also increased the second half of last year. For this year, we will continue our strategy to increase prices in line with inflation or a little bit higher than inflation, and we should be able to more than compensate the potential increases in raw material prices in pesos, because as Arturo mentioned, we have a better outlook on raw materials in dollars, but depending on the exchange rate, we will need to see what's going to be the prices in Mexico, depending on the exchange rate. But even with that, we don't expect a very high exchange rate, so we will be maintaining or even improving margins, hopefully this year in Mexico. So I don't know, Sam, if that answered your question.
That's extremely helpful. Extremely helpful. So basically, your raw material prices, you have it sourced at a lower price in dollars, but the peso impact will be, of course, dependent on the currency. That's the key conclusion, I guess.
Yeah, correct. Last year we have a very good FX hedge. We have an average price FX price of 18.5. Pesos per dollar. This year we're going to be around 1 peso above that. So that's why for us maybe the raw material in pesos will have that difference. But hopefully we'll compensate the U.S. dollar price reduction with this new exchange rate, and hopefully we'll be flat in pesos. And talking about the EBITDA, there's two basically items there that affect the operating income versus EBITDA. One is the non-recurrent expenses that you can see there, and the other one also is the depreciation due to the hyper inflationary in Argentina that grew also the depreciation. So that's why you see a difference in changes on the operating income versus EBITDA.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That was super helpful.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carlos Laboy with HSBC.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Arturo, when you think of future U.S. pricing, do you think that other bottlers and the Coca-Cola company are on the same page with you in terms of a new long-term reality? In other words, can we expect future pricing in the U.S. to be in line with bottler cost inflation or with just CPI?
Thank you, Carlos. Well, yes, as you know, pricing in the U.S. has been one of our focuses in as we come to that market, probably our top priority as we've seen, you know, what's been going on in the U.S. market in recent years. So I think we have a shared vision with the rest of the bottlers. And, you know, there's a close interconnection with the top bottlers in the U.S. So we maintain close conversations on pricing and many other strategic issues. I would say that we are very well aligned on that idea. The challenges are that, you know, to have an effective RGM strategy, you need to have more than just an alignment on you know, the will to do it. You need to have the capabilities. You need to have the right packages also to do it. You need to have the right segmentation many times. So that is where we need to work at. We are, for example, we are testing single-serve packages that are very important to have in the U.S. market at you know, smaller sizes as compared to our 20-ounce, which is our frequency pack in the U.S. And we need to work on segmentation with customers, which is very difficult to do, as you know. So there are a number of things that we need to do aside from just, you know, having the desire to move in that direction. But I would say that we are very well aligned with the bottlers to do it. Some bottlers are running some of the tests. We are doing things on our own, and we are very open to sharing the experiences among ourselves to find the, you know, the best path to continue growing prices above inflation. If you look at what we're going to do in 2019, is another good example of how, you know, there is an alignment on creating at the end this positive cycle of, you know, profitability and continuous investment in the market. Because, you know, what we predicated is that this is what we want to do, not just to improve our short-term profitability, but also our long-term prospects in the market, because, you know, higher margins, as you have in some of our Latin American countries, result in more investment in the market and coolers and, you know, execution at the point of sale. And that, in turn, you know, improves your business and creates this this positive cycle, which is what we want to have in the U.S. as well. So I would say that, yes, we are happy to have that alignment within the system, but now we have to work very hard. You know, that is the challenge ahead of us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Leandro Santinel with Bradesco.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. It's Leandro Fontanelli here. Just two questions. The first one in the U.S. and also in Mexico, it caught our attention that most of the volume decrease was explained by the flavor segment. So if you could provide more color of what's happening in the segment, if you see higher price elasticity for flavor compared to cola, for example. And the second question, we saw the Coca-Cola company selling a stake in a bottler in Latin America. We have been listening that they have been focusing some of the investments, a change in capital allocation. So if you see a potential stake sale in Arca as something that we could see or is a risk that we should have in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Leandro. What I will do is I will address your second question first, then I will turn it over to Pepe, our Chief Commercial Officer, to talk about, you know, flavor categories. Talking about KO and Andina, you know, as you saw, the Coca-Cola company mentioned that they are continuously evaluating investments in bottlers, and they have been consistent in that approach for many years. And the idea, that obviously, is to ensure that they're deploying their capital in the most effective way possible. And this will result in, as they said, changes, occasional changes in their investment in Butler's, and that is the case for their investment in Lindley last year in our own subsidiary, the sale of their stake last year. So what they've said is that that allows the Coca-Cola company to redeploy capital to brands and to new businesses, and that will be for the benefit of the whole system, which I think makes sense. Having said that, they have also mentioned that they don't have any plans to announce any other transaction with Butler's. As you know, they maintain around an 8% stake in Arca Continental and about 20% in AC Beverages, but that is as far as we know. So with that, I will turn it over to Pepe for your first question, if that's okay with you.
Thanks, Arturo. Thanks, Leandro, and thank you for your question. Regarding flavors, we can explain the negative results in two different realities. In the U.S., flavors have been more impacted due to higher price elasticity. Specifically, Fanta 12-pack cans were the most affected, mainly due to reduction in less profitable promotion activities, especially in the large store channels. We shifted most of these promotional activities in November and December to colas with very positive revenue results in the quarter, especially Coke Zero, that is growing 10.6% versus previous year. When we talk about Latin America, the explanation is a little bit different. We have been testing low or no sugar sugar formulas for our flavor brands across Latin America in an agile way, learning directly from our consumers. This has cost us some short-term volume, but we have used these learnings to develop optimal formulations in terms of sugar content and flavor. As an example, in Mexico, most of the volume decline comes mainly from the what we call the ADA segment, the lemonades and oranges category. This category began with an important contraction in April 2017, where we changed the formula to zero sugar content. We were able to reverse the trend in the fourth quarter 18 as we got new formulas and launched new flavors with a volume swing of 38% versus trend. But we didn't have enough time to offset the volume decline in the first 9 months of 2018. A similar fashion happens in Ecuador, where we also lost some flavor volume in the beginning of the year, but we seem to have cracked the code with the new Fanta flavor launched in the last quarter that has shown great results, reversing the trend in 31 points. So we're confident that we will recover flavors growth as we continue reformulating the rest of the portfolio. And a similar thing has happened both in Peru and Argentina.
Thank you, Leandro.
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ulises Argote with JP Morgan.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the time. Just a quick follow-up there on the U.S. pricing. Do you have any visibility in terms of the time frame for the 2019 price increases to be negotiated or rolled out? I understand that the July 18 price increases was kind of off-cycle, right? So just trying to understand here what the normal price increase cycle looks like in the region. Thank you.
Yes. Prices in the U.S. are negotiated way in advance. I'm talking about the prices that are negotiated as a system, or I would say decided as a system. And so that's already happened for 2019. And then just the calendar of the prices, that is fairly consistent in the U.S. We still need to do some work on our own to define the timing for our local customers. But the calendar will not have an impact. We still expect, again, the prices to be above inflation. And one thing that I didn't mention, it's very important, is that in addition to rate, I mean, that is nominal prices that increase, we also have an added benefit in the average price from the change in mix as categories like Monster and Body Armor grow. then we have a mixed effect that creates an impact on prices. If you look at the fourth quarter, we have about a 1% mixed effect. But that is something to take into account, because also that might have the opposite effect on margins. So it will result in probably in slightly lower margin, but higher net prices all in all. We're going to see that effect in 2019 as well. I just wanted to point that out. But prices are going to be in line with our plan and what we've told you in this call and the previous calls we've had.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ulises.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Philippe Ucros with Scotiabank.
Yes, good morning, Arturo, Emilio. Thanks for the space for questions. I just wanted to do a quick follow-up on your comments in Argentina. It seemed that obviously you expect a very tough first half, but you're expecting a better second half of the year, and I'm wondering what your expectations are for the country. I don't know if you could touch a bit on the renegotiations with unions for salary increases and how tough you think they will be this year, given how high inflation was during 2018, especially in the second half, and how much you will have to make up for employees on this and how it may or may not affect margins. And then, obviously, in the second half, you might have a lot of noise due to elections, and things are not looking great right now on that front. So I wanted to see maybe where you're coming from on your expectation for a second half, given that most of that electoral landscape is going to play out in the second half. And then secondly, on Santa Clara, if you could very briefly touch on what you think can be the sustainable growth, because you've had some pretty amazing growth over the last few years on Santa Clara, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. It's still on double digits. So I was wondering what your expectations are for that brand for the coming years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Felipe. Well, let me talk about Argentina. And as I've said, the situation is really challenging now. We're still comparing, again, to the first quarter of last year, where things were fairly stable in Argentina. And as you remember, situation got complicated with severe droughts and you know, impact on soy and corn production, a sharp drop in consumption. All things that happened last year actually did not start in the first quarter. So we're having a difficult comparison. We see, if we look at the year, at the complete year, we see actually a positive trend. It's like the problem is that we're starting at a very low point, which is where we ended last year. So the unions are always a challenge in Argentina. I don't think that is the biggest factor in terms of our concerns. It's obviously consumer demand, because if you look at you know, how that declined in the final part of last year, it was pretty significant. The shrinking of the economy, and especially how the disposable income of families in real terms declined. That is the biggest impact, I would say. But we see a positive trend for mid-year. And when you mentioned the elections, we think that the elections are a positive thing in terms of, you know, public spending, consumption in the second half of the year. So that, I think it's going to be more of a favorable effect. And as you've seen, we've been able to maintain, you know, very healthy margins in Argentina despite the conditions. And we've been also able to perform better than the rest of the system in Argentina. We're the only bottler that actually grew volume last year. So that tells you a lot about how we capture some of the opportunities that are still there. Let me give you an example of opportunities. If you go to a metropolitan area in Argentina, the largest cities where we serve, Salta or Tucumán, and you compare the per capitas, how much we sell to that population versus population that is in the neighboring regions of the city, the relationship is like 40% of what we sell in the cities is the per capitas that we have in the surrounding areas. So that is for a reason, because when we look at our operating indicators there, since many times we serve through third parties, they're not at the level that they should. So there's a great opportunity availability, just our current portfolio. So if you extrapolate that, that's pretty significant. That's about, 40 million cases. Doesn't mean that we're going to capture those the first year, but certainly there are things to do there in the market regardless of the economic situation. Same thing with returnable packages and new things that we're launching in returnable. Same thing with new brands to compete with B brands like Crush, which is a brand that we use to fight in that segment. So there are many things that we still can improve in the market and will offset the pressures that we have. At the same time, we also have launched a savings program, and I think we've proven that we're good at that and finding opportunities to continue optimizing our costs and our OPEX through the year. So we maintain our vision that this is going to be a year with an upward trend. It's certainly starting at a low point, as I said. So if you're okay with that, I will turn it over to Pepe for your Santa Clara question.
Great, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Felipe. Thanks for your question and hello. Regarding Santa Clara and the whole dairy and seed-based beverages, the answer to your question is yes. There's huge opportunities, and we will be capturing them within the next years. Just to give you some examples, we increased Santa Clara volume by 32% in the last year, and we increased our coverage in the traditional channel that is our stronghold in 5.5 points, but reaching only 49.6%. So the opportunity to keep growing in that channel is huge. We grew white milk 33%. We grew favored milk. We have introduced up to date 12,000 coolers. That is what we need to do. But when you see our market share, for example, in flavor milk is only 12.7% coming from growing 2.3 points. So there's a huge opportunity to grow. And there's another big opportunity also in seed-based beverages that complements that portfolio in ADES, where we're only covering 20% of our customers as of now. So the space to grow is really big. Thank you very much.
That's very helpful. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. At this time, I would now like to turn the call back over to management for closing remarks.
Thank you. Thank you all for your continuing support and your confidence in our company. We look forward to speaking with you again soon, and have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.